Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, Rob DeWalt will be with us speaking of the arts. Right now, I'm delighted to welcome back to the program Greg Palast. He's an investigative journalist for the BBC and The Guardian. He's the author of many books, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. His new book is called Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And among many, many other activities in his life, I thought we would also mention that he was an investigator for the New Mexico Attorney General. He investigated PNM. He will be at Garcia Street Books today at 5 in the afternoon. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hey, glad to be back here. Great coffee. Thank you.
Yeah, good coffee. Good coffee, good company. Reading your books, and particularly this book, Vulture's Picnic, one gets the sense of a world run by the most vicious greed, beyond morality, beyond ethics. You talk about so many things, and we're not going to be able to even scratch the surface, but let's talk about oil companies and oil spills, starting with the Exxon Valdez. What did you find out? When did you find it out? Most people don't know this real story.
Well, actually, if you don't mind, I'm going to back up a bit, because we were talking about Occupy before we came in, and actually this Vulture's Picnic is about just that greedy world. I was just at Occupy. I was invited down there to present this information
in
a trial of British Petroleum. I was the prosecutor. And Bobby Kennedy calls this book the manual of defense manual for the 99%. The point is, I do investigative reporting for BBC. I'm investigating the 1%. No one down at the Zuccotti Parker, now we're floating around in Wall Street, is against Wall Street. Wall Street's an address. It's a piece of tarmac. It's on a Google map. It's the 1% and who they are and what they do to the rest of us. And the problem, we talk about the rich, the 1%, bad guys. Who are they? I give you their names. I give you their addresses, their phone numbers. You get to meet their ex-trophy wives, see their house is bigger than the Vatican. But most important, you find out what they do for a living. And as you know, just before I got on the air, I was one of the targets of Vulture's Picnic, Paul the Vulture Singer, who is worth about $4 billion. He's probably the number one, with the Koch brothers, number one donor to the Republican Party, Mitt Romney's key advisor. He called London. He had his goons call London to threaten me to stop these investigations. I want you to know who the 1% are, how they get their money, get inside their goofy lives, and find the names of their victims. And
I mean, this
that's
is,
one of the things
this
I'm
is,
trying to do here.
I think people should know just this example. Funders, political funders, Republican funders are calling up Greg Palast and telling him, do not investigate the news.
Yeah, well, it's easy to do for in the U.S. because we don't investigate the news. I have to go across to England to be an investigative reporter. But, you know, like in the case of Singer, well, you know, also Mitt Romney would like me to change the book from Vulture's Picnic to Job Creator's Picnic. But that's kind of the idea. There's a myth from one side that if we tax the rich, if we control the rich, my God, we'll take away their ability to create jobs for us. Well, you should meet these guys and find out whether they've created any jobs like Paul the Vulture Singer, their top guy. What job is he creating? He makes his money. He's a international repo man. He buys debts of the poorest nations like Peru and Zambia, gets the right to collect. Like in Congo, he paid like $10 million, then goes and grabs $500 million. I was just in the Congo a couple weeks ago. There's a cholera epidemic there. UNICEF was waiting for this money from a shipment of cobalt. It was grabbed by the vultures, by these vulture financiers. Now, this stuff is illegal in the rest of the world. So, yeah, Paul the Vulture Singer might be
so money that was supposed to go for health care instead was going to pay a debt, but not going into the pocket of any government, but into the pocket of these incredibly wealthy people. What it is that they still want to buy is beyond me.
Well, yeah. I mean, the next jet. They already have a couple. I mean, in this case, for example, in the case of Congo, one of Singer's fellow vultures, these billionaires, he took a stolen security. Congo owed money to Bosnia, to the Yugoslavia, which doesn't exist anymore. The prime minister of Bosnia was given a payment of $2 million. He's now... his own government discovered this and is trying to arrest him for selling this debt security that's like a mortgage to one of these vultures. And now the vulture has now collected $100 million from the Congo based on that $2 million for that debt that on that payoff to the Prime Minister of Bosnia, right? And so that's what they're doing. Is that, what job is that creating? I mean,
And the concentration of wealth, I mean, this is what the 1% thing is about. The concentration of wealth, I just, as you were speaking, did the math on $4 billion. You could create 80,000 jobs at $50,000 a year, good job. That's the entire population of Santa Fe County on what this one person is worth.
Yeah, well, but I wouldn't mind if they were, if, you know, Steve Jobs created an iPad. I don't care if he was worth billions. Oprah entertains us. That's okay. That's not the 1% we're worried about. We're worried about guys like Singer who, for example, the asbestos companies knew that they were killing their workers with asbestos and they hid that medical information. When it came out, the asbestos company went bankrupt. Paul the Vulture Singer, Romney's man, is threatening me now. He buys these asbestos company, Owens Corning, for next to nothing, uses his political muscle with George Bush and other politicians to basically screw down the workers on the amount of compensation they get before they die. And then it's like, take these pennies, you're going to die anyway, take it or leave it. Now these asbestos companies then become worth an absolute fortune, and Singer makes his first killing, you know. That's how he makes
literally
his billions.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't want to accuse the guy of murder, though I have to say, and I'm quoting the Deputy Undersecretary of the United Nations, former, who said, these vultures, their business is causing babies to die. I mean, so that's your 1%. You want to read about them? And that's, of course, now we're only in chapter one.
Yeah, right. Well, one of the things, and I think one of the big takeaway lessons, because there are so many different examples of it in your work, is that a lot of these heads of companies would rather pay a fine than have anything that ensures worker safety in the first place, because it's a cost-benefit analysis, and the cost of human lives is counted in dollars, not in some kind of greater value.
Oh, yeah.
Some examples.
Yeah, well, for example, in the book, we have a chapter called The Pig in the Pipeline. I've come down from the Arctic after meeting with the leader of the Eskimos. It's a long story. I go from Africa to the Arctic to Bosnia and end up back in somewhere in the USA. There's this XL Keystone pipeline that's going to slash down the middle of America. And they're telling it's a safe. But I've been noticing massive cracks and explosions all over the country in pipelines. What the heck's going on? I put out the word, and sure enough, I get back from three guys. I have to call them Pigman 1, Pigman 2, and Pigman 3, that software for the software in what's called a pig. Every pipeline has a pig in it, not just like the bloated executives who get sucked in or something. It's a robot, and the robot beeps and boops and squeals when something's wrong. It's going to explode. It's going to crack. It's going to whatever. Like if something goes wrong with the XL, the pig is supposed to tell us. But what we found out is that the corporate chiefs ordered the pig, which is used in all the pipelines in America by law, dialed it down so it's not sensitive, so it doesn't squeal and warn us. And why? Because if that pig squeals, they got to replace the pipe. That comes to millions, and there's a lot of pipe. It comes to billions. To save billions of dollars, these guys simply dial down the pig. By the way, it's against the law. The law is very clear on how sensitive that thing must be.
And the law is not being enforced.
Yeah, and so what happens is, you know, it's kind of like taking the battery out of your smoke detector, which is okay as long as you don't, your kid's room is on fire. So what happens is, now these guys would not, they gave me the information, but they wouldn't go on camera, they wouldn't even go in shadow on camera. And then Sam Bruno last year, you'll see in Vulture's Picnic, pipeline explodes, nine people are incinerated instantly. Horrible. Pigman 1 comes forward and says, it's not an accident, it's a homicide. These guys did deliberately. They knew that the pig wouldn't identify that crack. And the problem is, it's just cheaper for companies, I hate to say it, to pay off. So you pay a family $2-3 million. Okay, so it costs them $30-40 million. That's nothing compared to the billion that they just saved by monkeying with the software.
Right, and there's multiple victims of that. One is the people who are actually hurt by it, and the other is the environment. I mean, you write that basically these companies feel that the entire earth is their garbage can.
Yeah, well, in fact, BP In fact, unfortunately, it was on NPR that you had this Dr. Hazen was of Lawrence Livermore Lab gets on and says that nature's a happy toilet. You can just, you know, crap into her all day and all night with oil or anything you want. And she has happy microbes that eat up all the oil, and nature cleans itself. What was not mentioned on that radio program was that Dr. Hazen was given $500 million, not million dollars, by BP to spread for himself and to spread around biology labs all over America. An independent biologist actually took me out to the Gulf 7 months after the spill, and 150 miles away from it. We get a boat. We're about a mile offshore. We jump out of the boat into, well, we're sitting at a coffee table here. I mean, the tar mats, you know, half the size of this restaurant. And that's what's supposedly nature's clean cell. I said, how much of this stuff is out here? This is the chairman of the biology department at Alaska. He said, there's 600 miles of this stuff. He went to Congress, by the way, and complained and got fired.
Right.
Job. That's the other thing. These guys have power, and they punish those who step out of line. And that's in Vulture's Picnic. I have a lot of stories of courageous people who stand up to the machine and get rolled over.
Tell us about the precursor to the spill in the Gulf. There was a similar thing in the Caspian Sea, which was totally covered up. What happened?
Yeah. Well, okay. April 20 last year, explosion, boom, deep water rising goes up. It's on TV because of the big flame. I get a cable from the Caspian Sea, from a ship floating in the Caspian Sea. A guy says, I'm an eyewitness. I saw the blowout. I said, you're in the Caspian. You know, it's like I get a secure line. Find out, what do you mean you're an eyewitness? You're in the Caspian Sea. He says, yeah, exactly. It happened exactly the same. Another BP transocean rig, same thing, blew out 2 years earlier in the Caspian Sea. Same cause, cheap crap cement that they use. A cheap drilling.
Cheap cement. I mean, this is something that it didn't have to be that way.
Yeah, but you have to understand.
Cement isn't really that expensive.
Well,
no.
I have to tell you, I understand why BP did it, the motive. It's $500,000 a day to rent a rig. Quick set cement saves a day or two. That's $1 million, okay? That's $1 million for every hole you drill. That's a lot of money. So to save that money, they use this cheap method, hope it works. It doesn't. They covered that up. But that's a serious thing because, again, it's not an accident. Then the Deepwater Horizon becomes a homicide. So I actually have to, my network, BBC, sends me into Azerbaijan, what I call the Islamic Republic of BP, head off across the desert, get arrested. They take my film. Luckily, they didn't take my pen, which was one of those Austin Power jobs with the camera
inside.
It. And I get the information out of Azerbaijan that, indeed, there was another explosion, which BP covered up. They were in front of Congress 6 months before the Deepwater Horizon saying, we don't have problems with this drilling. They didn't disclose anything.
Let's go back to Exxon Valdez.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this spill, which, as you say, could have been contained. It wasn't. What happened?
Yeah, before I was an investigative reporter, I was an actual investigator, gumshoe. I did the big, giant racketeering cases in America, and I was in charge of the racketeering investigation of the Exxon Valdez breakup. Exxon's name is on the ship, but the real culprit, and I'm not letting it off the hook, you'll find out in the book that they had turned off the radar because the GPS was expensive. It wasn't those $200 jobs at that time. It was $2 million, right? And to stop an oil spill, you should have never heard of the Exxon Valdez. You just surround the ship with rubber, and you have a sucker ship that comes called containment ship. It sucks out the oil. Boom. It should have been a nothing story in the newspaper. You'd have never heard of it. Instead, British Petroleum said that they had all this safety equipment and all this rubber and sucker equipment and all that in Alaska on Bligh Island. That's where the ship hit. It would be like, it should have been like a trash can fire in front of a fire station, nothing. But it was a lie. There was no equipment there, none. And the train people, the fire crew, the emergency response crew that was supposed to be there was there. They were the Tetitlik natives who lived there. They were watching the ship come in. They were trained. They had been trained to respond to an oil spill. But BP had secretly, quietly fired them all to save money, even though the law required, by law, they were required to have this crew, and they fired the natives. But who's going to go to a native village and say, hey, are you guys still on the payroll? They didn't have any equipment. They watched helplessly as their village was inundated with oil. But that's why BP... That's what happened with the Deepwater Horizon. They were supposed to have that same equipment out in the Gulf. Where was it? The answer was they got away with it in Alaska. This equipment cost billions to set up and maintain. Billions. They figure it's just easier just to pay the fine. And by the way, they're not getting $20 billion. In the book, I explain how they use this guy, Ken Feinberg. We call him Mr. Fairness. You know, when I say when the energy combine wants to screw the public, they use a screwdriver, and his name is Mr. Fairness. There's not going to be more than $5, $6 billion handed out. That's it for complete, and I've been down there. Devastation on the Gulf Coast. It's still there today.
We're talking to Greg Palast about his new book, Vulture's Picnic. So you have all these stories, and one of the things that one can't help but ask is, where are the laws? I mean, even when there are laws, I mean, these things are illegal, why are they not being enforced?
Well, it's the money. I mean, in Azerbaijan, they used beatings and bribery and babes. Lord Brown, that's the chairman of BP, sent down his 727 jet, his private jet, picked up Azeri, government officials, brought them back to London for lap dancing for the weekend. There was also a $30 million bribe paid. By the way, I did give all this information by law, I have to, in Britain for BBC, to BP. Gave them the chance to deny it. They didn't. They wrote kind of a cockamamie letter, which you can see at vulturespicnic.org. I always put up their responses, but there's no denial. Bribery, and then, of course, beatings by the dictatorship. But even here, massive bribery, less so in the Minerals and Mining Service, which is supposed to actually regulate deep water drilling. The same type of game, whether it's in Azerbaijan or here. Actually, oddly, the bribes are smaller in America, seem to be effective.
When you look at all this, I mean, first of all, it's a great... It's a great argument for distributed power generation. I mean, if you have a solar panel on everybody's roof that costs some little amount of money to install, even if that's very heavily subsidized, you don't have that massive flow of oil and gas that is making these crazy nations that are corrupt and environmental disasters and boom-bust cycles, which, as you say, every country that has discovered anything in the ground like that, except for Norway, has undergone.
Yeah, like New Mexico, which is a nation which, in a way, has suffered from resource curse, too. In fact, I used to be an investigator for the Attorney General of New Mexico. I did some investigations of PNM here. And what I found with PNM and the other companies I investigate here, it's not the power companies. The big problem there is the political power that comes with all that money that flows, your money that flows through these corporations. And it's just too tempting for them to mess with the rules to save a few bucks. Now, for example, I also have a chapter on Fukushima, because when I was an investigator for the government, and I saw the plant start to melt at Fukushima, I knew it wasn't going to withstand the earthquake, because right in the book you'll see the handwritten notes of an engineer that I have from my files from 1988. And the handwritten notes of the engineer says, no way can this plant withstand an earthquake. That's in the engineer's notes.
Right.
But it all gets covered up. And, you know, and one
and
of the
first... What are these people thinking? They're thinking, well, let's just hope there's not an earthquake.
Yeah. You know, in the Exxon Valdez, they said, we haven't had a crack up in 16 years. In, you know, with the nuclear plants, they're just hoping, well, you know, they go a few years and it seems to be okay. And I don't think they sit around and say, oh, let's melt Fukushima. Let's run a ship on the rocks. But I don't think they do, like you say, cost-benefit analysis, what's the probability, and then, frankly, they just say, well, what's it going to cost us compared to what it's going to cost to fix things? And I can tell you right now, the nuclear engineer in this notebook, the guy, he has to order this guy to change a report from failed the earthquake proofing test to pass, and he does, to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And the guy, you know, he says the guy's upset, he's nervous, he's agitated, but it's his job. That's what he's concerned about. It's his job. Actually, what he's more concerned about, by the way, than the melting of the plant is that he's violated the law and he could go to prison.
Right.
And we did catch him, by the way. The problem is that the company that we caught, Stone & Webster, you know, corporations, unlike people, shift their shape and they became Shaw Construction. Obama has authorized 4 new nuclear plants in the U.S. with national loan guarantees. All 4 will be built by Shaw Construction, which is Stone Webster, the company that faked the earthquake test. So there you go.
What do you think is the potential of the Occupy Wall Street, the national Occupy, international Occupy movement to actually not only bring attention to these things, which is doing, but actually doing something about them, or any movement?
I think, you know, look, I'm a reporter, investigative reporter, old style. So I believe that information gives you power. They've been controlling the information flow, whether it's this Dr. Hazen on NPR, or it's, you know, that BP owns, or, you know, shutting down the news. Obviously, my reports don't get on the top of the nightly news. This report on Paul the Vulture Singer and his other vulture brethren, 2 weeks ago, I just came back from the Congo and Bosnia, that report was the top of the BBC nightly news worldwide. And it was the front page of the Guardian newspapers where I write. And, you know, but Greg Palast reports, where were they in the U.S.? On page zero.
Right.
So, you know, it and the thing is, once the information's out there, people do react. In the U.K., in Britain, and Europe, they changed the laws. That's why Singer can't really operate there, because when people know things, they get upset and they react. Just like, you know, I think most people know Greg Palast as the guy who broke the story about how black people were removed from the voter rolls of Florida. You know, they were called felons, and of course their only crime was voting while black. Well, I couldn't get that story in any U.S. newspaper. And finally, thank God, the community radio stations picked up the story. The independent not-for-profit stations picked up the story. And now,
Like
Democracy Now! And the whole national discussion has actually changed as that information, that our elections are not what they're cracked up to be, that not every ballot gets counted. Now that's a big national discussion. So I think that with information, and Occupy is a great conduit for people waking up and saying, wait, I'm not sure I believe the job creator story, the creation myth.
It's just such nonsense. I mean, you know, in an industrial economic system, you need some concentration of wealth, but not that much. Not that much to where they are just sitting on it and buying luxury items that aren't, you know, that, yeah, they create a few jobs, but nothing
trickle
like
down.
The same money that, well, I mean, you just, it's just a math problem. If you look at how much money these people have and how you could use it to create jobs if it were either taxed or put into actual companies where they were paying people to do stuff,
well,
but that's not what's happening.
Yeah, well, in fact, actually, I have a chapter in Vulture's Picnic called The Generalissimo of Globalization, where I do an investigation of Goldman Sachs. And get some of their inside documents. They did this flim-flam deal with Greece, which is why Greece burnt down. They took money out of the Greek treasury with the Greek government's consent, played around with yen, brought it back into the Greek treasury so it looked like the Greek government made billions and billions of dollars wiping out their deficit, and Goldman lost. Well, Goldman loses never. It was a scam in which the money was really owed back to Goldman. Goldman gets a $300 million, that's a third of a billion-dollar fee for this little flim-flam job. And then when it gets discovered, of course, the Greek economy completely explodes, taking down Europe. Now, so Greece is a crime scene. Now, going back to your statement, and you're dead right about this, is that what job is that creating? They got $300 million for doing what? Did they build a ship? You know, the Greeks are shipbuilders, right? They weren't building ships. They were burning down the shipyards financially. You know, they weren't creating jobs.
Right.
They were creating mayhem.
I met once, years ago, an African-American woman who was a student at Harvard Business School. And she basically said, as far as I can see, about half of what we're learning or more is how to move taxpayer money into our own pockets.
Yeah. I mean, no one wants to use their own money. Opium is other people's money is the ultimate drug.
Other people's money. And what she said, it was interesting. She said, you know, wherever there was an ethical issue, I would bring it up in class, and then I was the token person bringing up ethical issues. And so when there was an ethical issue, everybody would turn their head and look at me. And she said, then I just shut up and waited for them to start looking at the ethical issues, and it made them very nervous.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you that, you know, one thing you'll find out in the book is that I actually studied under Milton Friedman. I was there at the founding and the creation of derivatives. I worked on those things. I was in the Chicago Boys group, so I was like at the founding of all
this. Did you start on the other show? Shall we call it The Other Side?
Well, no, actually, believe it or not, I was undercover. I was told to go in and get in close to Milton Friedman by Chicago's industrial unions. They wanted to know what was up there. And so I got my degree under Milton Friedman in international finance. I got a great job.
So you were a graduate student in international finance under Milton Friedman.
Working directly with Milton Friedman. And the and the Chicago Boys, believe it or not, and got a great offer from Goldman Sachs, which a choice I turned down to work for labor unions and just enough to still allow me to get food stamps. It's a choice I've never regretted, believe me.
We've got just a moment left, but you are, you know, called the last of the great investigative reporters, and we've talked endlessly about the problems in journalism right now and the deregulation of broadcasting and so on in the 1980s. What would it take to have hundreds and hundreds of Greg Palast-style, well, maybe your style is inimitable, but, you know, that level and intensity and commitment in investigative journalism in the United States?
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, we have to get off of Mr. Murdoch's plantation, Viacom's plantation. It's just impossible, and including, I hate to say it, taking corporate money out of so-called public radio and TV. We gotta remove the money poison before the news truth can get through.
And yet,
I mean, there's money to investigate.
Way,
yeah, I mean, look, I have, as you say, an inimitable style. I wear the funny hat, and I do kind of my Sam Spade real undercover investigative stuff. It's expensive and it's difficult, so I don't expect American reporters to be able to imitate this. But I'd like to see this stuff on the air, and I think that there are great reporters in America if they had producers who would let them put the stuff on the air and let them write the stuff in the papers, and you just can't get that. And that's the problem. There's great people out there, but I encourage people, in a way we have to, that's why we have the occupations. It also creates an army of citizen journalists to pass the information around. In fact, that's why I have a site, vulturespicnic.org, where you can like take the first chapter of the book and download it. And I'm actually putting up the documents from the book itself. So that, you know, if I say, here's a document from Goldman Sachs, you can actually see the document. You can pass the stuff around. So whether you buy the book or not, you can start passing information around. That's very, very important to me, is that kind of like it's going to go through the drum circles at the occupations.
Greg Palast is an investigative journalist for the BBC and The Guardian. His best-selling book that probably many of you have read is called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and his new book is called Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum, Pigs, Power, Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. He will be at Garcia Street Books here in Santa Fe today at 5 o'clock. You can find out more at gregpalast.com. Palast is spelled P-A-L-A-S-T. gregpalast.com and vulturespicnic.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
What a terrific show. Thanks.
I'd like now to welcome Rob DeWalt. He is with the Pasa Tiempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. He is with us every Friday speaking of the arts. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Are you getting cold? It's cold out there.
It is cold out here, but it's warm here in Coffee Land.
It sure is.
The Santa Fe Baking Company. And Greg Palast just gave a terrific interview. His book is Vulture's Picnic. He's at Garcia Street Books today at 5 o'clock. That's the lead for our speaking of the arts. It's not the arts, but it's just as important.
No, it's an important book.
Indeed.
It's important. Anyone who has an alternative tentacle sticker on their laptop is a friend of mine. great record label. Anyway, how are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah?
How are you? What's happening well, first of all, how are you?
I'm good.
Good drive in from the...
Yeah, you know, I thought I was going to wake up and there was going to be like, you know, trees toppled over and there was going to be snow on the ground. It was going to be kind of post-apocalyptic. I was kind of depressed to wake up and then it's just kind of calm and gray. And
I know.
You know.
Yeah,
they just built it up so much on the news.
Yeah, the snow deluge is yet to come, I suppose.
Yeah, I know. But you know, we're prepared. The dogs are inside. It's too cold for them outside today.
Hey, speaking of dogs, cats, Felines and Friends, a local cat rescue and placement organization, is having a Homes for the Holidays adoption event at Petco on Saturday, that's tomorrow, December 3rd, and Sunday, December 4th, from 12 to 4. On those 2 days, cats will be available for adoption at special reduced fees. Come and find your forever friend.
Every cat must go.
All cats must go.
We're slashing our prices in half.
And feeding the cats.
That's right. Feeding
sweet,
the cats.
Sweet, delicious kibbles.
Okay.
Do cats eat kibbles?
Their own version of it. Cat bowls, sort of. So there's all kinds of stuff happening in Santa Fe, and around Santa Fe today, but there's some great openings, and this is great. Centennial, a group show of work from the Museum of New Mexico Foundation Shops. And this is this Santa Fe Arts Commission Community Gallery at the Community Convention Center. And there's a reception today from 3 to 5 p.m. It's an early start for a reception. Anyway, that's open through January 27th. We've got Peterson Cody Gallery, red and green, new paintings by gallery artists, tin work by Diane Moreno. There's a reception tonight from 5 to 7:30 p.m. There's tons of openings. This is one of my favorites. Hide and Seek, an art treasure hunt, a citywide art event. And there's an opening party tonight from 5 to 9 p.m. at Caldera Gallery, which is at 926 Baca Street. And it's part of the Baca Street Art Festival, which also happens this weekend. There's going to be all kinds of cool events happening there. But the thing that's happening at Caldera Gallery is pretty interesting. Crockett Bodelson, who is one half of Scuba, of the Scuba Art Collective, contacted me and said, we're going to do basically a treasure hunt. So they hid like 20 or 30 pieces of artwork all around the city. And they've developed treasure maps, and there's a tool lending library at the gallery, and there's a clock, but it's kind of a compass instead of a clock, and there's a radio station that's going to be giving away clues, and there's a cafe that you can go to and order a bowl of soup, and there'll be a clue underneath the bowl of soup. Anyway, nice. This thing is very involved, and they're sort of holding a lot of it close to their chest,
they'd give away the treasure hunt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the point was to have an art exhibit with no art. That was their deal. They would look like they wanted it to be citywide, and this was a great way to do it. I mean, and you know, this is something that you can do with your family or your friends. You don't have to do it alone. And so show up from between 5 and 9 tonight and pick up your maps and figure out like how all this clue stuff is going to work. Now, I think it's supposed to be going on through January 6th, the treasure hunt is.
Oh, okay.
If things get, you know, found before that, then, you know, they'll close it.
Okay. Sunday at 3 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore, there's a concert by local band Round Mountain, Char and Robbie Rothschild, and they're singing American folk sound with world music influences. That's Collected Works, 3 o'clock on Sunday.
Sweet.
Yes.
Touching Stone Gallery has a great opening, Within Without. It's a group show of Tubaco, which is ceramic boxes. There's a reception from 5 to 7 tonight through December. You'll notice like an uptick in the glass and ceramic openings because it is the holiday season.
Right.
And these things tend to ramp up during that time. Instead of buying a nice, you know, $30,000 piece of blue chip art for your loved one, go get them a nice piece of ceramic.
A nice piece of ceramic.
Exactly.
And tonight at Gig, Brazilian and classical guitarist Roberto Capocchi is doing an evening of solo classical guitar. And then tomorrow night, Bruce Dunlap will be playing also at Gig. The concerts are at 7:30 in the evening. Gig is 1808 2nd Street right here in Santa Fe.
You know, yesterday was World AIDS Day. And today, I believe, is the opening of Angels in America Part 1, Millennium Approaches, at the Greer Garson Theater on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. This is an incredible play. This is an incredible cast. There's a story by Jennifer Levin in today's Pasta Tiempo. If you know nothing about Angels in America, it really does. It really does explore the psychology of AIDS. Really,
yeah.
And but the play is, I mean, it's in some senses it's kind of out there, but in another sense it's a very poignant play. It's as powerful as the Matthew Shepard play. I can't remember the name of it right now.
The Laramie Project. I saw Angels in America on TV and just loved it.
Yes. Yes, and this is obviously it's a local production. It's a Greer Garson Theater, but the cast is top notch, and December 2nd and 3rd at 8 p.m., 2 p.m. on Sunday, December 4th. The play runs through December 11th. You can get tickets at ticketsantafe.org.
And don't forget Midnight Magnolias.
Yes.
Midnight Magnolias.
Yes. Midnight Magnolias, and I don't have anything. On that. I don't have anything on that at the moment.
We'll get you the times in a minute, but yeah. It's opening at the Santa Fe Playhouse, and is this
yes.
weekend and next weekend.
Yes.
And the Nutcracker at the Lenzic
Yay,
this weekend.
The tradition.
Two shows tomorrow and two shows on Friday, Aspen Santa Fe Ballet.
Right.
And on December 10th, the CCA will be screening a film called Invitation to the Muse. It's a 35-minute documentary film produced in Santa Fe by filmmaker Karen Cantor. She did a 3-month residency at Santa Fe Art Institute, and she asked artists what were their sources of inspiration and how they navigated the creative process, made a film about it, and there is a panel discussion on. Oh wait a minute! Saturday, December 10th. That's next weekend.
That's okay.
I'll read this next weekend. Sorry.
Okay. I found the Moonlight and Magnolias information.
Okay.
Okay. This is Santa Fe Playhouse's some presentation of Ron Hutchinson's comedy about the making of the movie Gone with the Wind, and there's an opening night gala tonight at 8 p.m. at the Santa Fe Playhouse. You can call the box office at 988-4262 for ticket information. You can go to santafeplayhouse.org to find out future dates of the play. This play runs through Sunday through December 18th, and it runs Thursdays through Sundays. So you have some opportunities to see it.
Excellent.
3 weekends, I think.
Now, Cinderella. El Dorado.
Yes.
Children's Theater and Teen Players.
Mm-hmm.
And that is tonight at 7:30, tomorrow at 2 in the afternoon and 7:30, and Sunday at 2 at the James A. Little Theater. And Cinderella's cast is made up of 41 children and teens and all sorts of really wonderful people. They do a very, very good job. Have you seen them lately, the El Dorado Children's Theater?
I have not seen them lately, and I'm embarrassed, you know, because my godkids go to school out in El Dorado, and, you know.
Bring the kids and bring the kid within.
Yes. It's going to be magical.
And for more information, let's see the number here. 466-3302, I believe, is where you get tickets.
Cool.
No. Sorry. 466-4656. That's the number for tickets. 466-4656 or eldoradochildrenstheater.org.
It couldn't be more timely, this Newt Gingrich, who's running for president, and he's not going to back off his stance on sort of slackening the child labor laws. And
that's such a good idea.
I know. On that note, Chimera, which is this education, outreach, and mentoring partnership created by Meow Wolf and the Center for Contemporary Arts, are presenting a play that was basically workshopped through Santa Fe Performing Arts City Different Players in the Teen Ensemble. It's actors ages 7 to 18. And this is about a dystopian society in which children are ripped from their homes and placed with guardian strangers who are then tasked with preparing the children for the workforce.
Well, oh, boy.
So it couldn't be more timely. Anyway, 7 p.m. Friday, December 2nd, at the Armory for the Arts that's tonight. That's an opening night. The performances continue 7 p.m. Saturday, December 3rd and 10th. There's another Friday performance on December 9th and a 2 p.m. Sunday performance on December 4th and 11th. You can call 984-1370 to get more information about this. I guess Meow Wolf just opened their Glitteropolis
in Las Cruces.
Exhibit in Las Cruces.
Yeah.
And I was going to try and get down there next weekend, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. But I am going to make it to Unit 113.
Excellent. There is an event on Thursday, this coming week, Thursday, December 8th at 7 in the evening, called Olive Trees for Palestine, a chamber music concert to benefit the Palestinian Solidarity Project. Classical musicians Elena Soposi, Carrie Lay, Gail Robertson, and Dana Winograd, amazing musicians all, are partnering with local activists volunteering for the Palestine Solidarity Project, also supported by another Jewish voice of Santa Fe. So that should be a wonderful event, and it's at the Unitarian Universalist Church at 7 on Thursday, right here in Santa Fe.
Now, we've got this Winter Spanish Market, right?
Yeah.
That's coming up. We have the, if I could find it, where is it? Where'd it go? Winter Night Party, pre-winter Spanish Market event, 6 to 9 p.m. tonight. Music by Pecos High School Mariachi Band. There's going to be food. Artisan's work is going to be available for sale. This is at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center over there on Marcy Street. There is a ticket price for this. If you go to call 982-2226, you can find out more about this event. And I think if you go to the Spanish Colonial Society website, you can find about Winter Spanish Market as well.
Excellent.
It's a great, yet another great opportunity to do some holiday shopping locally by local artisans.
John DeGraff and the Happiness Initiative. John DeGraff is an author who has a new book called What's the Economy For Anyway? And he will be in Santa Fe Monday, December 5th at 5:30 at the Travel Bug here in Santa Fe. The number over there is 992-0418. It's at 839 Paseo de Peralta. And he is the author of the book Take Back Your Time and the director of the Happiness and Outreach Director of the Happiness Initiative. He's produced a lot of PBS specials, and he's the co-author of the book Affluenza, the All-Consuming Epidemic. So that's it should be good. I'm going to try to interview him, although it probably won't be before the actual event, so we wanted to give people the heads up.
I saw this actually driving into town. I saw a sign for a holiday fair, the 25th Annual Santa Fe Waldorf School Holiday Fair, storytelling, puppetry, games, food, gifts, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday over there at Santa Fe Waldorf School. If you call 983-9727, you can find out more information about that. Lots of holiday fairs coming up. There's a holiday arts and crafts fair on Saturday at the Mary Esther Gonzalez Senior Center. They're everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And we need them.
They're multiplying.
Excellent. And this Saturday, tomorrow, right here on KSFR, Camp Love Wave brings you Michael L. Legion and Aurora Light, the authors of Prepare for the Landings. Are you ready? And there, it's all about ETs.
Extraterrestrials?
Yep. And there is also an event on Monday, the 5th of December at 5 in the evening, called the Day of the Volunteer Celebration, put on by Coming Home Connection, which provides free volunteer in-home care. And there will be hors d'oeuvres, violin entertainment. It's at Vanessi's. The phone number for more information is 988-2468. And you can get more information at cominghomeconnection.org.
NATO. There's the Santa Fe Community College School of Arts and Design is having a winter showcase. And it is work by students and faculty. There's going to be dancers. There's going to be chamber singers. 7 p.m. on Monday at El Museo Cultural in the Rail Yard. Call 428-1000 to find out more information about this. And this looks really cool. On Sunday, winter celebration on Museum Hill. There's going to be a hands-on dreidel, menorah, and ornament-making workshop. Performances by Gypsy Klezmer Cabaret Band, Welcome to Bohemia. That's our lovely Ron Dadu.
Yes.
Romanovsky. The Oak Canyon Dancers from Jemez Pueblo. And there's dancing by Danza Mexica. And there's going to be a discussion of Navajo astronomy. And that's from 1 to 4 p.m. on Sunday at the Museum of International Folk Art and the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture on Museum Hill. And it's all by museum admission. If you call 476-1272, you can find out more info about that.
And did you find out about the, did you talk about the Art and Soul event? It's a sale of, no, you didn't. It's a sale of cards, art, gifts by local artists to benefit PAWS, People for Animal Welfare Society. And it's one day only, Sunday the 4th of December from 11 to 5 at 781 Bishop's Lodge Road in Santa Fe. For more information, 505-757-6260. And that's it.
Neato.
PAWS.
Red Mountain Press readings. We didn't cover this. Local novelists and poets are going to read from their work. Susan Gardner, Gary Moody, Wayne Lee, Mark Talbert. And that's during the Baca Street Art Festival. And it's from 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Saturday at one of my favorite new bookstores in town, Opsit Books, over there on Baca Street. It's in the same little area where Counterculture and Caldera Gallery are and all that. They have a wonderful sort of first draft of a William Burroughs book over there.
Oh, really, so rare books, used books?
Well, it's rare and used and some new, I believe. But it's a very relaxed bookstore.
Wow, and a new bookstore. People are like, it's almost amazing to believe that anybody would open a new bookstore, given the direction of
book
sales.
You'd be surprised. They see people like me coming, and they're like, oh, yeah.
And speaking of books, there's a holiday book sale at the main library Saturday, December 3rd. That's tomorrow. And Friends of the Library sale, it's from 10 to 4 in the afternoon. It's open to the public.
Now, you interviewed Jamie Stillings. Was it yesterday?
Yeah, or the other day,
It was the other day. One of these days. They all sort of bleed together now. But he's got this great monograph called The Bridge at Hoover Dam. He's a wonderful photographer. And he's going to sign copies of and discuss the book, the monograph, from 3 to 5 p.m. on Saturday at Photo Eye Gallery over there on Garcia Street.
It's very, very good.
Yes.
I loved it. This book about, I mean, for anybody who has any kind of you know, little builder engineer within themselves. Mm-hmm. You look at this book and you see this arch being built on just sheer rock faces, and then the two sides of the arch come together and they meet at the top, and you see this process almost like in slow motion from one page to the next. It's so cool.
And very few photographers can catch the magnitude of what happened, of what was built there. And the monograph is amazing. It's amazing photography.
And the book is really big, so you're looking at these big pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
You're moving your head to see everything in the picture.
I love when he was talking about the process of, like, sitting there and just, like, sort of hoping that when the sun reached a certain point in the sky that something particular would happen, and very often nothing happened.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't get the result that he wanted, so it was like, okay, I'll have to come back another hour or another day. So it's a meditation not only on this huge project, but I think it's also a meditation on the patience required to get the shot.
Exactly. Yeah, which you don't see when you're reading the book. You just flip pages. But the hours and hours that went into so many of those pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So what else is happening?
Gosh, I don't know. There's so many holiday, you know, sales. I want to remind people that just because it's getting a little chilly out there doesn't mean that the Santa Fe Farmers Market has gone into hibernation. You know, just a quick reminder to visit your farmer's market 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Weekly. Those are winter hours, so those are going to happen through December, and then hopefully they'll pop up.
And the social justice team at the Unitarian Universalist Church has sent a note saying that there's a forum on the Occupy movement for December 7th, which is, what day of the week is that, Wednesday?
Yes.
Wednesday. It's called What About This Occupy Movement? Public Forum, 7:30 Unitarian Church, and the event will feature presentation by local Occupy activists, followed by questions by the panel from the audience.
That's what it's called? What About This
Members of Congress have also been invited. The event is free.
And it's called What About This Occupy
What About This Occupy Movement?
It sounds like the opening of a Jay Leno joke. What about this Occupy Movement? Hey? What do you think about this? Hey? Olive Trees for Palestine. Did we talk about this?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
But we didn't talk about the Best Brass of Christmas.
Oh, yay.
At Sunday at 2 o'clock at the United Church of Santa Fe at 1804 Arroyo Chamiso Road. 11 brass players from Farmington to Albuquerque, Santa Fe to Denver will ring in the Christmas season in a wonderful, glorious brass style. And it is free, although you can make a donation to offset their travel costs because they're coming from all over the place. And look at them. They're so cute with all their little tubas and French horns and trumpets and saxophones, I think. What is that? And all kinds of great instruments.
More book stuff.
Trombones.
Kazoos. Museum of New Mexico Press book sale on Tuesday the 6th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Stuart L. Udall Center for Museum Resources on Museum Hill. I mean, there's just, there's books everywhere.
There's books everywhere, and ladies and gentlemen, they are fun to read. Boy, we did not get to everything. I'm so sorry, ladies and gentlemen, those who sent in announcements, but you just can't do it all. We do the best we can.
We do the best we can.
And I went a little overtime with Greg Palast. So anyway, you can send in your requests for announcements to radiocafe@ksfr.org. You can go to santafe.radiocafe.org to find out what the contact information is. And I should put the format up there too, because when you put the format in, it makes it easier for us to read. If you send attachments, chances are they won't get read.
Yep.
Rob DeWalt is with the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's with us just about every Friday. Speaking of the arts, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Stay warm.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to the fabulous Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you should. And you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And please make your comments. I would like to hear comments, more comments from listeners. You can email or just post on Facebook. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. After that, Jazz a la Carta. Many thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc and the fabulous staff at KSFR. We'll see you next week. Hasta la vista. Bye, Rob DeWalt.
Bye. Have a good weekend.
You too.